Happy Podcast Day, guys. I have the lovely Lori Petro on the podcast today. She is the author of Love, Heather, which came out this week and is an incredible book that you're going to want to get your hands on. Before we talk about Lori's book and Lori, we are going to talk about my favorite book of the week, which is another one that came out this week. It is The Grace Year by Kim Liggett, and I've posted about it on my blog and posted about it on Instagram before, but I want to remind you guys that it's out. It is one of my hands-down favorite books that I read this year. It was so incredible and really pulls you in, and Kim just creates this world that you will feel so deeply. And it's being made into a movie, like it's already having its moment, so you definitely want to read it. It's very much like Hunger Games, Handmaid's Tale, a mixture of all of those, and it's really wonderful. So I'll go ahead and read you the blurb. No one speaks of the Grace Year. It's forbidden. In Garner County, girls are told they have the power to lure grown men from their beds, to drive women mad with jealousy. They believe their very skin emits a powerful aphrodisiac, the potent essence of youth, of a girl on the edge of womanhood. That's why they're banished for their 16th year, to release their magic into the wild so they can return purified and ready for marriage. But not all of them will make it home alive. 16-year-old Turney James dreams of a better life, a society that doesn't pit friend against friend or woman against woman, but as her own Grace Year draws near, she quickly realizes that it's not just the brutal elements they must fear. It's not even the poachers in the woods, men who are waiting for a chance to grab one of the girls in order to make a fortune on the black market. Their greatest threat may very well be each other. I couldn't say enough about it, and it's the sort of book where I don't want to say too much, like I don't want to spoil anything for you, but it is it's just wonderful, and you need it in your life. And it was the sort of book where I was crying at the end, you know, just because I was so emotional, and then I just sat there afterwards, like, staring up at the ceiling, and I was like, oh my gosh, this book was one of those books that you will remember for a really long time. Lori is my guest on the episode today, and her book, Love, Heather, is another book that will stay with you for a while. And she'll tell us all about it. It's out now, and it's just something that, you know, it deals with mental illness and the hardships of high school and women relationships, and it's something that I think a lot of people in many different ways can relate to and find a little piece of themselves in. But I also just think it tackles really important things that are, you know, happening in our world today. So you guys are going to really enjoy getting to know her and hearing about her YA debut. I'm not going to hold up the show very much longer. I don't have a lit chit chat this week. So let's go ahead and get to know author Lori Petro. Let's go ahead and get started and have you tell us about your upcoming novel, Love, Heather. And this is your YA debut, but you've published a couple other adult novels, right?
That's right. So I feel like I'm just, you know, trying it all. I have had a book of short stories. And then I had a novel, and now I'm having a YA novel. And so I feel like the word debut is going to follow me into my fourth book. And just, you know, someone calls it a debut.
I love it. Now you are trying a bunch of different things. And I think with this book, Love, Heather, which I read and, like, devoured, because I think it's very unique for what's coming out there, for what's coming out this year. So, would you mind just telling us a little bit about the plot?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the reason that, well, I don't know for sure, but I was going to say maybe one of the reasons it feels a little different is, I mean, I haven't written a YA book before, and I don't read a ton of YA, but I read a lot of, like, YA adult crossover stuff, books, and that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm like a lifetime Harry Potter fan.
Oh, yeah.
So there's this long-time YA adult crossover thing for me. What the book is about, it's about a young woman named Stevie. She's 15. She's in grade 9, or ninth grade, I guess, as you would say. in high school, and she is, you know, unapologetically Canadian. So I think that one of the things I just kind of put it out there is that she lives in a small town in Ontario, and to the credit of my American publishers, they never batted an eye, which I think is interesting because, you know, to go off on a mini tangent here, there was a time not that long ago where editors would really pressure authors to make their book sort of feel like it would be a small town anywhere or that it would be more universal, but I think place is actually finding a place in readers' hearts and authors' hearts more now, and I'm finding that, you know, readers from Canada or from this particular area of Ontario are responding quite strongly to the book. It was important for me that she was in Canada just because, as you know, I won't, no spoilers, but there are certain elements that have to do with justice that wouldn't apply in the States but do apply here.
So
Phoebe is, you know, she's 15, she's in grade 9, she's navigating, I feel like, some of the terrible, frightening, awful things that we all navigate when we're that age. You know, when friendships go wrong and some really intense bullying. What's unique about Phoebe's situation is that it's really timely, and so it's dealing with bullying and gender-based bullying and violence in the digital and social media age, and the fact that the bullying never sleeps and that it follows her home through her phone and online, and you know, she has a YouTube channel, and there's really no escape for her. She subsequently meets a young woman named Dee who sort of offers her all the courage and chutzpah that she finds herself lacking. And together they decide that they're going to create this kind of vigilante club and start, you know, getting back at the bullies. So pulling these pranks that are signed Love, Heather, which are based on, you know, the movie Heather, which is one of her favorite films. So, I noticed that Phoebe is a cinephile. She has her own YouTube channel. She loves 80s and 90s films. And this is something that she has in common with Dee as well. So the two of them are part of this vigilante group, and of course, it starts to get out of control. And one of the many kind of lines that I feel like I was trying to play with, that the gray areas I wanted to work with, was about, you know, who is the bullied, who are the bullies, and what happens when that kind of, that line gets blurred.
And I think you did a great job at just addressing so many different things, because I think you're right. We all struggle with these sort of things in high school or middle school whenever it hits us. Even as adults, I think bullying is something that is rampant in our world, especially with social media and all of that. And I think it's just a really important book. I think it's something that everybody, I think the majority of people will be able to see themselves in and connect with. And it left me, like, sitting there at the end just, like, really thinking, you know, and I thought about it for days because I think, you know, I had a terrible time in high school with really mean girls, like I think a lot of people. So I think it's something that will really, you know, hit people hard in a good way.
I think what can be so difficult is that we feel, we kind of go from being with our parents, being with our friends, and that the intimacy of those friendships is so intoxicating and so strong, and we lean so heavily on those friendships at a young age because we're just learning how to be by ourselves. And
yeah.
So, you know, we cling to friendships like a drug. And so they take on this huge importance, but they don't really represent that kind of danger for us when we're adults, hopefully. So hopefully we've adapted or we've built coping mechanisms as adults. But when you're that young, you know, you kind of been thrown out into the world and you no longer want to hang out with your parents, and then you meet these friends and suddenly it feels like you want to be together all the time. And they really wanted to portray that feeling of wanting to be with your friend all the time. And then if that gets, the rug gets pulled out from under you, how disorienting that can feel for a young person.
Yeah, because I think to a certain extent, those friends that you connect with and wanting to be with them all the time, it's sort of like your first, like, friend love, and that can always, you know, is very intoxicating and can definitely be heartbreaking when it ends and when something terrible happens.
And so I really wanted to play with that. And, like, my other book, Sister of Mine, I dealt with that as well. That was Between Sisters. Again, that kind of, that really, really close intimacy, that feeling like you have to, whether you want to do anything for someone else, and I was playing with that as well. I feel like that's a trend in my well, the theme in my books is that idea of exploring these female relationships, whether they're mother-daughter or sister or friendship.
Yeah. Well, I think you did a wonderful job with Love, Heather, and I'm excited for the world to read it and rave about it.
Thanks so much. You know, I think it's timely. Like, it deals with mental health, and it deals with violence in schools, and
yeah.
It deals with gender violence, and it deals with consent, and all of these things. I mean, the things that readers are responding to are all of those topics, and I'm finding that they are both teenagers and parents of teenagers who are reading the books, and librarians and educators, and, you know, are recommending that book, saying that it's a tough book because it does deal with all the stuff that we're dealing with right now. But I think we have a tendency when we read stories in the news to make snap judgments, and I wanted to really dig down deep into what the causes of some of these acts are, and what the roots of them and the origins are, and why maybe it's not healthy for us to make snap judgments about the children and their children who are involved.
Yeah, and I think it's very important story at this time with everything going on. And, you know, I love the conversation opening it up in just a different way about mental health, because I think you show it in a, you know, a different light than is talked about or people feel comfortable talking about. But it's super important. I think it's something that teenagers feel very alone with and can feel alone with. So I love that you opened up that conversation.
I think you're referring to the author's note at the beginning of the book. So my editor suggested that I write a note to the readers and didn't say what I should say, which is kind of great. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take a stab at this, just because it deals with such difficult content.
Yeah.
And so sort of like an author's version of like a trigger warning, but also like what were my intentions with this book, because I'm not at all trying to offer answers, but rather to probe questions, which I think is the role of a writer in general. And so, yeah, at the beginning of the book, I have this author's note that talks about, you know, there are gray areas, and it's not black and white, and not good and evil, and that we kind of need to lean on each other in the end. So that was, that's actually really a really important thing that I did right at the end. So right, you know, right before it went to sort of last edit was something that we decided to add in.
I think that is an important note, and I liked seeing that at the beginning.
Good.
Well, let's talk about, and you mentioned how, you know, your, like, debuts are following you. So would you be able to tell us a little bit about your story to getting published with, you know, your first book to this one?
Sure. I mean, everyone's story is different. Of course, I feel like mine's not typical at all, but I don't know if there is such a thing as a typical journey to publish. My first book was so long ago. It feels like it was before Goodreads. There was, you know, this enormous arm of social around the publishing and the reading industry. I had been always writing short stories. A friend of mine who's an artist suggested that I send some to a publisher she knew. Like, honestly, this is what it was like. I didn't research any publisher. I didn't think of anything. Conversation that I had, and I sent it to Beth Follett from Peddler Press. And little did I know, it was a really prestigious, well-respected small press in Canada. And so I sent what I had to Beth, knowing nothing about her and knowing nothing about what I wanted. And she said, she'd never published a book of short stories before, and she said, write back to me when you have enough for a book.
Hmm.
And so I worked for another year, and then I sent her a collection of stories, and she said, yes, I'd like to make these into a book, and it was just that. And now I just laugh at that, because, I mean, it's not that easy at all, and it, you know, I sort of fell ass backwards into good fortune. And it's a small press, and it's a wonderful press, and they've published beautiful books, and I'm very proud of that book, and I'm proud to have had my first experience in publishing with Peddler Press. It became a Globe and Mail best book of that year, which was really exciting for me. But at the same time, I had just had my first son, who was 3 months old or 6 months old at my watch. I was doing in the middle of writing my PhD, and then I went on to have another boy. And so while I was, you know, working as a full-time professor, I was trying to complete my PhD, and I had two very young children. I was starting my career as an academic, and so I didn't write fiction for quite some time until I sort of got my feet on the ground at my job. And then, you know, I wrote a book. Oh, I know what happened. I went to the Banff Center, which is this wonderful place. It's like camp for adults in the Rocky Mountains. And I'd written the first draft of a novel. And the faculty advisor, writer who was there with us, Michael Crummy, who has just been longlisted for the Giller for an amazing book that he wrote called The Innocents. But so he actually, that week, sent a note to his agent and put in a good word for me. And by the time I got home, she signed me, and she's been my agent ever since. She shopped that book around, and it never got picked up. And so in the meantime, I wrote something else. And then she shopped that around, and it felt like I was getting rejection after rejection after rejection. I mean, really, like with any story, if there's anything you can leave this with, it's that, like, I've had hundreds of feels like of rejection.
Yeah.
And then it won a huge prize. It won this Half the World Global Literati Award, which is $50,000 American for a book a fiction that features the inner lives of women. And it changed everything for me. HarperCollins bought the book after that. It was wonderful. It made me feel like a writer again. The money was wonderful, and it sort of changed everything. I'll never forget that day.
Wow, what a journey. And I think you said something about how yours isn't a typical journey. I don't think there's any typical journey. Every author I talk to who answers this question always has something different to say.
I think that's it. Like, I mean, what's so great about having this online community of writers and readers and early authors and experienced authors right now is that people can say things like advise you on, you know, query letters or on all of those things. But, you know, it was sort of the Wild West at the time, but there is nothing that's typical. So despite all of that advice, it is very good advice, and you know, all of that stuff is sound. It's also, each of our stories will end up being different in the end.
Yeah, which I think is sometimes hard to see, especially, like, I know one author I talked to, she told me she started querying in January. She sent, like, 4 queries, and one of them, you know, she got signed. And it's like, oh my gosh, if every person only had to send like 4 queries, we'd all be so happy. But I think it can be easy to get lost in the, like, oh, I want that to be my story. Why can't it be that easy, you know, quote unquote, easy for me? But I think it's just that the journey is what makes it even sweeter. Because like your first, you know, when you published the book of short stories, you had a lot going on. Baby, PhD, but you still got to, you know, achieve what you wanted and take the time to then do a bunch of different things and live your life. And you still got to where you are today, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I was saying about the, why can't it be that easy for me? Like, I still feel that way. I think that, you know, your career, and also the more that is out there, like there's that kind of, and this kind of harkens back to the book as well, like the thing we call it compare and despair, like, you know, you see what everyone else is doing and you think, well, why isn't that me? Why isn't this happening to me? Why aren't I invited to this? Why isn't, you know, and it's very disheartening. And you have to kind of temper your involvement so that you don't end up comparing yourself to what other people are doing, because each one of those stories of success is, you know, also has someone sitting at home in their pajamas, like, fretting over whatever they just submitted or whatever they're working on or whatever rejection they just got.
Right.
I think it's wise for us to recognize that there's sort of the backroom reality, and then there's the social media, or, you know, facade. And what's great is when you start to see some of those, you know, the warts and all expressions of what the experience can be like. Like, my most popular tweet by a landslide was me talking about how I went to a talk that I was invited to go to, that I'd gotten childcare, that I drove across town, that I was nervous, and I walked into the room that was filled with chairs, and there was not a single person in there. And that, unfortunately, has happened to me more than once, but so many authors are like, me too, I've done that too, that's happened to me too. And so I think that it's nice for us to share some of the tough parts of it, as well as our successes, because with every success, you set your goal a little bit higher, and you expose yourself to the risk of failure again. And you know, as you keep on getting more successful, your goals change, right?
Definitely, they definitely shift. I think that's something I love about the online writing community, is that I feel like a lot, you know, there's this push for being a little bit more real, for not just having social media be about like the highlights of our life and the best part. Of course, we still share that, but I love when I see people who, like your tweet, exactly, you know, they post the real hard things that they're going through at that moment, and it helps them not feel alone and helps everybody else who thought that that was, you know, only happening to them, makes them feel a little bit better.
Oh, 100%. I would say that that night, when it started to kind of get retweeted, all these great responses, I was like, oh, and it didn't bother me anymore. I took the wind right out of it. It didn't, you know, I had a glass of wine and I had a laugh and I went to bed and I thought, this doesn't bother me, because I was able to kind of, could I let it out?
Yeah.
Because it had no power left anymore. And so I think if you hide these, so they're your own personal failures, then they never see the light of day, and there's no one there to go, oh yeah, that happened to me at that time.
Right. I like it. So did you have to query at all? It sounded like you didn't really have to query at all, trying to find your agent.
I didn't know what that, I've never heard that term until, I don't know, a shamefully recent amount of time. No, I didn't. I just probably put it in an envelope and mailed it to her, honestly. There was probably a cover letter, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like it was really the dark ages. I didn't get any advice. I didn't, like I said, I just fell off backwards into it. I'm very fortunate for it, but, and she could have, you know, taken one look at them and said, forget it. But right. I don't think that she had, you know, a towering flash file to send either. So it's not like I was sending this to, so I didn't look for an agent at all. Even the agent, the publisher. So that was the publisher. It was my agent. Again, Michael Sammy recommended me to his agent. I didn't look at any other agent.
Yeah.
That's not true. I did meet with an agent around that time. And I remember thinking that I didn't think we'd like the same books. And it occurred to me that if someone didn't like the same books as you, they probably wouldn't be the best agent for you. So it was really important to me when I did meet my agent that we shared the same style, the same love of books.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I don't know how important that is now. I mean, I'm really glad for it. I'm thrilled for it. And she is my agent is my first reader, and she's read so many drafts of my book. So yeah, she didn't get what I was going for. It wouldn't really work. But it's also important to have someone who, and my agent's also described as someone who has ice in her veins, you know, someone who will
put it back. I love it. Well, I will say you are probably very lucky that you didn't have to query, and I'm sure there's lots of people who are like, what? But, you know, it just goes to show everybody's journey is just a little bit different.
It's true. And I think when I see those pitch wars and mentor things, I think those are really helpful. The best thing you can do is put your stuff out there. I mean, over and over again. Don't, what do they say? That great is the enemy of the good? You know, you don't want to not cut off your nose and save your face because you're waiting for it to be perfect. Just try. And if you're okay with not getting, if you're just okay with having a fire hose approach and throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks and seeing who you meet in the process, and then maybe making some good connections and finding an opportunity to send yourself, then I think that's the way if I didn't have an agent right now, that's what I would be doing. I know I would be. I would just be like, fire hose, just go have at it.
Yeah. Because I think in this, you know, day and age, everybody is so accessible, especially with all the pitch war stuff going on. You can ask questions and just connect. And even if they don't, you know, pick you or whatever, then you guys maybe follow each other and they see something else later on that they, you know, enjoy. And I think I'm unagented, so I don't, you know, I do like the little pit mat and things like that, just as sort of practice of okay, if I had to boil this down to 280 characters, how could I do it? And I think that's just good practice too, is just sitting there thinking about your story and getting it down to a couple of sentences.
I think that's really, really important for any kind of storytelling, to be able to boil it down to what is the hook that'll make it interesting. Because ultimately, you are going to have to, even if someone picks it up, you are going to have to figure that out over and over and over again.
Right.
As you're writing the draft, what is this book about? What can I boil it down to? I just finished a draft and sent it to my agent. So I'm going to be biting my nails off, wondering what she's thinking. I do revisit that even now. And while I was writing that draft, I will revisit it over and over again. What is this book about? What's important to me about this? Why? How can I describe cards. And then when it gets finished, it's like, how are they marking it? How do you want to be pitched? How do you, what's the blurb on the back look like? Over and over again, you're going to have to be able to come up with some, you know, pithy, probably you won't love it, but maybe you will, way of attracting some attention to it. I think one of my favorite stories is my friend Marissa Staff, who told a story about Jennifer Robson, who is, you know, a multi-bestseller author. She at one point last had two books on the Canadian bestseller list. I did a book talk with her, and my son leaned over and said, I think you're a little out of your league, Mom. So good. Anyway, she had to, she was querying and wasn't getting any hits for her, one of her first, I guess it was her first, one of her first books. She writes historical fiction. And then I think her sister-in-law, and I might be getting, you know, totally bastardizing some of these details. But anyway, so someone said to her, look, like, keep the query letter the same, but add fans of Downton Abbey will love. And she did that, like, took her dog for a walk, came home, and her phone was, like, literally ringing off the hook. Like, her phone, if you phone anymore.
Crazy.
And so suddenly, she was able to come up with that thing that made that book suddenly possible in a time when people, that was right when Downton Abbey was hitting.
Yeah.
It suddenly has found its time. And sometimes it's timing, and sometimes it's thinking, okay, how can I reference something that is really, you know, hot right now? What will be interesting? That's something that I think is really important as you're doing those little mini pitch war things. That's what helps you get that, your attention. Like, how do you rise above the noise? How do you get some attention to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, and I think it's definitely good practice always in any form that you can get it, because like you said, you have to continue to do it. You don't get to just write a query letter, get an agent, and be done with trying to sell your work.
Oh, and then when you do, like, you're never done. Then you're waiting for someone to tell you that, you know what, this might have something, but it might be totally garbage. Like, you're always in that, like, fretful phase. There's never, if I could just do this, I'll feel good point. There's always something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no rest for the wicked kind of thing. But also, you know, if you think, well, I've never done that before, well, then do it, and you can't say that anymore. You know, just keep on doing the things that you haven't done yet, and then you'll be an old hand at it.
I think that is very, very true. Let me ask you a question, and it's a two-parter. So it's, what's the best part or hardest part of writing for you, and then what's the hardest part of being an author for you?
Yeah, those are different. Because when you first started asking that question, I was going to answer it, the hardest part of being an author, so that is a different answer. The hardest part of writing, the first draft. The first draft is like, you are just, it's like you are in the wilderness with like a butter knife. You are trying to cut your way through. You've got nothing. Whereas at least when you've done a first draft, there's like this shitty road that you can kind of turn into something. But like before that, you are just building something out of nothing. And so that is definitely the hardest thing for me. And I find, as someone who writes, like, I'm not a prolific writer, which someone might disagree with because I write so often and I'm like, you know, I work so much, but I don't write a lot at a time. Like, my books are not long. Like, my book of short stories is, like, thin. Sister of Mine is not a long book. Love, Heather is not a long book. And so for me to be, like, looking at page 21 of the first draft and thinking, okay, I gotta write another, like, 65,000 words.
Yeah.
More than that. Like, that's daunting. And I find that to be very hard. And I just keep on pushing through. Like, I'm a very tenacious person. I really like to persevere and get through something. I'm very goal-oriented, and so I feel like those personality and character traits serve me well in those moments where I'm like, okay, come on, if you set yourself a goal, let's just go. That's the hardest thing for being a writer. The hardest thing for being an author for me is I am so impatient, and it is my absolutely worst quality. I know that I am the most pestering client that my agent has, like, by a long, long time. By a long slide. Like, she is so long-suffering and patient with me because I'm constantly like, did you read it yet? Did you read it yet? What do you think? Can you do this? What about this? What about this? Like, I act like I'm the only person in her life.
Yeah.
And so I'm irritatingly impatient and never, ever satisfied. So I think that the hardest thing for me. But those are personality based. Those might not be the hardest things for other people. Although I imagine that first draft is probably a common
complaint. The first draft is a hard thing. I was just started a first draft and it was like this blank page. I was like, oh my gosh, well, I haven't looked at a blank page and started something in like 2 years. I like lost my mind a little bit thinking about starting a new book. I'm like, this is going to kill me.
Yeah, I just wrote a short story this week and I was like, this is so easy. What? Because you're just kind of dropping into a life and you can kind of paint a little portrait and you can get out in 8 pages. I mean, oh my God, dream come true. And when I first wrote my first novel, the one that didn't get picked up, I tried to kind of trick myself into treating it like short stories that were actually chapters, which you can't do that. Yeah. I mean, there are some parts of your book that are going to be like just getting A to B. Whereas when you're, I mean, hopefully they're also, you know, beautiful passages, but you're working on it's a long game, and you're working on a plot, whereas a short story, every single word is in the service of the plot because it's so short. And I feel like that was a different mentality for me to get into. Whereas when I'm writing the first draft of a novel, I can do more like the hard slog kind of stuff. And then I can come back and refine it, polish it, and make it pretty later. But I'm just trying to get the work done at the beginning.
You're just trying to get the idea on the page, get those words filled in.
Yeah, landmarks, right? Like, I'm just trying to, like, what are my milestones?
Yeah.
How am I going to get from here? And okay, I've got this, like, this is important also. And then I'll be like driving or in the shower and I'll be like, oh, okay, I should add more here or I should do that. But then, you know, I feel like those moments when I'm on a first draft, when I'm driving or in the shower, that's when things start to kind of percolate. But there's a lot of percolating in the first draft.
Yeah, the first draft is a rough one. I've written both of my previous novels mostly during NaNoWriMo, which was like so motivating. You have this like great community, everybody's doing the same thing, but it's September, nobody else is doing that, and so I'm like, I have to do it. You know, I don't have this like community of people like urging me on to write 1600 words or whatever it is a day, and it's been a little challenging. This question on you. We talked about the hardest parts. So let's talk about the best part. So what's the best part of being a writer and the best part of being an author?
The best part of writing?
Mm-hmm.
Best part of writing. The best part of writing is editing. I like it, though. I really like editing. I like editing because I've got the thing and now I can make it better.
Right.
And I, like, whenever I get notes from my editors, the first thing I do is marvel at how good they are at their job. And because their notes are so good and I'm so impressed. And I feel like, I can do that. But that's an easy, it's like the whole thing is little tasks. I can do that. And I feel so good about it because it's like not like, you gotta write 5 more chapters. It's more like, hey, can you tweak this little area? And I'm like, yeah, man, I could totally do that. I feel like achievable goals, but also in the service of something better that someone else is helping me with. So I really like that partnership a lot. And the best thing about being an author is readers. Like, nothing fills me up like reading reviews from readers, reading responses from readers. Nothing makes me happier than that.
I think that is something as a reader, I started all of this as a reader. You know, I think it's so cool nowadays too that, you know, you can connect so easily with the people who write the books that you love, and I can imagine on your side to be able to hear directly from those readers is pretty wonderful.
I don't love hearing in person. That makes me very uncomfortable. I like to read. I really am uncomfortable with actually listening to feedback, good feedback. Bad feedback I can handle, no problem. It's the compliments make me twitchy. But it makes my heart happy to read them.
That's good. So everybody will know to not compliment you in person. Just send you a message. gosh.
My husband, because he's like, oh, I was, you know, I had total rock star envy. I wish I had been a rock star. Oh, God, that's like my worst nightmare. And he's like, yeah, but don't you love, like, being up on stage when you're talking about your book? I'm like, no, I hate it. Like, I don't love it at all. I like talking like this about the process, but, like, I find, I don't know. I'm a reader. And I like reading.
Yeah, there's something completely different about being up on stage in front of people, or any sort of platform where people are staring at you while you're doing it. A little bit different.
That's what I do for a living. Like yesterday, I was in front of 340 students. Like I speak in front of people for a living, but I'm not speaking about myself. And right. So I think that it's being a professor and having that kind of performative aspect of my actual job is very different from getting up to the book talk, where I feel like infinitely more self-conscious and anxious. You know, when I'm getting up to talk about design theory, like I do that all day long. No problem.
Love it. So my next question is about your writing style. I want to know if you're more of a pantser or a planner. Do you know what those are? Sometimes people are like, I don't even know what those words mean.
Yeah, I think I know there. So pantser is like a flying up most of your pants and just kind of wing it, and a planner is a planner.
Yes. Okay, good.
Right?
Yes.
I'd like to think that I'm a planner, but I think that as I'm a planner in so far as I can be. Like, it's like, okay, I know that I'm writing this book, and this is what's going to happen, I think.
Yeah.
But it's like one of those, like, that analogy of kind of carving your way through the jungle. When I get this part, it might feel and look a lot different than I thought it was going to. And I may not trust what I thought earlier. And now that I've written more about the characters and, you know, gotten to know them a little better, so to speak, I think, oh, maybe they wouldn't behave that way, and that's not true to the book, or that's not true to their motivation. So that's not what they need, or that's not what they deserve. And so that might change. So, especially with endings, like, I think that I sometimes have an idea of exactly how things are going to end. I've noticed myself with these things start to change the further I go along. So, yeah, I guess I'm both. I guess I'm both.
Yeah, I think different, maybe you just need to be a pantser, you know, more in the beginning, like, to get the idea percolating, and then once you get a little bit farther into it, the planner comes in, and is like, okay, here, let's drive the ship a little bit better to where we need to actually go, because that's sort of how I do it. I start an idea with, like, a random inspiration of something I think about right before I go to bed, and I make a note of it, and write it out as much as I can, and then you got to actually start thinking about how to work.
Mm-hmm. I love writing, like, the first page. Like, that to me just feels so exciting.
Yeah.
So, back to the point where I have an idea and I just want to stop everything and write down that first page. Like, I feel really good about it. And then I'm like, okay, let's think about this. Where's this going to go? How's this going to, you know, how are all these pages going to get filled up and by whom?
I love doing first lines. I love, like, having a really great first line pop into my head and, like, trying to, you know, pull out all the pieces of the story just from a first line. I think that's really fun.
So the second line, it's like, I'm on the 150th line. Is this feeling as good as my first line?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about when your love of writing began. You said you were, you know, have always been a reader, so I would assume it probably spurred from there, but could you tell us a little bit about your love of writing?
Yeah, I remember being in, like, grade 8 and thinking, okay, I read That Was Then, This Is Now, and The Outsiders by Nancy, and she had written that. She'd had them published by the time she was 17, and I was like, that's going to be me. And then I remember, like, lying on my bed in my residence room in university, having this real, like, woe is me existential crisis because I wasn't published yet. So, right. I mean, that tells us I'm a writer. Like, that kind of drama is ridiculous. I loved writing when I was, like, just writing stories when I was in school, and then when I was in university. But I went to school, like, I did my undergrad in fine art, like, I was a painter, so I was always really, really a visual artist, and that was what I was kind of known for by my friends and family all through elementary school and all through high school, and that's what I did my degree on in university. And then I just stopped, and as I was writing, I wrote for, like, university magazines when I was in university. And then I just kind of always kept on writing, but didn't keep on doing visual art, really. It didn't I didn't make time for it, but I always made time for writing, and it became the thing that I wanted to make time for above all else. So maybe I wouldn't have said at the time that I wanted to be a writer, certainly not. I didn't go into a creative writing program, didn't even think of that. It was something that I liked to do. It never even dawned on me that I could study it for school or anything else. I liked to do it, and I knew I was good at it, and I enjoyed it, and I liked the feeling that it gave me when I was writing, and I didn't think very much about it at all. And so it was sort of, again, it was sort of a surprise to me that it ended up being the thing that I love so much.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I think I can definitely, I can't remember what book it was, but I remember a book I read in middle school or high school, but the author was a teenager. I was like, this is totally going to be me. And I had I wrote a book in high school that's like garbage, but you know, we all have to have that book. And I remember very similarly, like the drama, woe is me, like I'm never going to be published. What am I doing with my life?
I'm over the hill.
Yeah. Nobody's ever going to publish me now. I love it. Well, I think that, you know, writing is something people fall in love with at different stages of their life, but I think in so many ways it's a very, at least for me, it's a very therapeutic thing. You know, it's like you can just get out of your own head, you know, to create these worlds or to deal with big issues in a fictional world, which I feel like Love, Heather does in a way, you know, to be able to channel that and to let your brain process it in a fictional world that you have control over is really helpful.
I really wanted to write a book about a girl who gets mad, and we see so many, you know, school shootings and so many angry, you know, angry white men, and I really wanted to write a book about a young girl who reached that same breaking point. And so that was the impetus for me from the very outset. And then it was like, who is this girl, and how did she get to that place?
Yeah.
That was really, really important to me. It's so important to me. Like that, this book means so much to me. Maybe more than anything else I've written. It means so much to me because I feel like there's so much of me on the page, and there's so much of me as a young person on the page, and as a mother, and as a professor of young people. Like there's so much of me in there, and so much of the people that I love, and also my young self in there that I feel like it's really putting myself all out there book. And to me, it is an important time for it. Like, I believe in it. I believed in it at the very beginning, and I fought hard for it. Like, I really believed in this book from the very beginning.
I love that you said, you know, the whole premise of it was a girl who gets really mad. I remember, you know, thinking long ago when I was younger and reading books, like, you know, I really struggled with mental health and with depression and bullying. And I remember just being like, I'm so angry. Like, I want to like know that other girls like deal with this and are angry. So I think that, you know, it is so important. And I love that you took that challenge to put so much of yourself and your feelings and, you know, being a parent and all of that in there. Cause I think, girls who are really angry and who are dealing with this will be thankful to just see, you know, their struggles and their feelings validated in a book format, which I think, you know, that's the wonderful thing about reading is that you can escape in a fictional world, but also be like, oh wait, that's like me. Like I sort of fit into this situation. Like, and you can kind of process it in a different way, which I think is really great.
Thank you. I think a lot of people are afraid of it. Like, a lot of publishers were afraid of this book.
Yeah.
It was not easy, an easy land. And I am so grateful to Crooked Lane for never once doubting it. Like, there was not a hesitation. And with virtually every other publisher who looked at it, they flinched and they couldn't do it. And I think they were afraid of what it meant. They were afraid of what it was saying. They were afraid of what the implications would be. And Crooked Lane never thought twice about it and just helped me get it to where it is. And so I'm just so thankful to them for that. Like, I don't know what I would have done if when it was time for me to submit a new book and I submitted this one to them and they said, no, we won't touch that with a 10-foot pole. I don't know what I would have done. I would have felt very, very disheartened. So it's so important to find a publisher that that believes in me. But if you're tackling tough stuff, and I think the young adult fear is like, as soon as it kind of became apparent that it was young adult, in fact, the first cover for the book was geared more towards adults, and then it sort of dawned on all of us that it was more of a young adult book. The cover changed, but I think the young adult publishing sphere is very careful and very tentative, and so they should be. I mean, it's a vulnerable reading, reading demographic, but I think you also have to you have to give them credit, and you have to sometimes go there, and this book does go there. And you know, I was disheartened when some publishers weren't willing to go there with me, but I'm so grateful for the one that did.
I'm grateful too. I'm grateful that they saw the importance of the story, and I think, you know, you want them to be tentative publishing in the young adult sphere, but I think when you think about it, these kids are the ones who have to deal with this stuff, the school shootings, the bullying, the social media drama that follows you everywhere. So why not let them read about it and feel it and not feel so alone in it? So I'm glad that you found a publisher who was like, yes, this is going to be good and what we need out there right now.
Yeah, and they were, I mean, we were careful with it. As part of, like I said, writing that author's note, like, I mean, we had to be tender in our budget, and I think that was really important. It's, you know, I'm not doing this with any kind of big, you know, tweaking, unthinking approach to it. I'm thinking about it all the time as the way to address these things, and so I think, and they were very careful too. So we weren't hasty in our approach, and I'm just really pleased, and it feels like it's landing nicely. Like, it feels like it's landing the way that we wanted it to, which is great.
I think so too. I think you know, it's a subject you want to deal with care, and, you know, go into it thinking about the different possibilities. But I'm really excited for it to come out and for people to talk about it and read about it. So, yeah. So my next question was your revision process, but you already kind of told me about your love of editing, which and, you know, getting the notes back from your editor. Is there anything else you want to share about your revision process and what that really looks like for you, maybe before you send it to your agent and editors?
Terrible. I would send it to my agent, like, on page 5. Like, I have zero self-control and, like I said, no patience. So, I don't know, in terms of vision, I guess I'm really short-sighted.
Well,
but I'm totally And so I think that one thing I will say about myself is that, and that my agent knows about, I mean, I think my editors know as well, that even if the book that arrives on their doorstep is not, it's not there, I will get it there. And so I am a total workhorse, and I'll do the work that, and I really, really do believe in the editors and the business. I believe in what they see is the best thing for the book. So I really trust that, because I really do feel like they like the same kinds of books as me, and that they want to make it the best book possible. So I very, very rarely push back on notes, on my editors, because even big notes, like let's change the ending kind of notes, I have to consider them very carefully, because I trust them.
Yeah.
I trust that they know who we're writing for, and their readers as well, and sometimes you can be so close to a project that you think you know what's best for it, but you got to try other things on and see how they work out. And I would say, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, they work out. So taking someone else's feedback who works in that field, who works in that industry, knows what they're doing, like, they're good at their job. Let's let them do their job.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for people to remember, and especially people, you know, who are authors who are going into that process. Like, you got to make sure that, well, yes, this is the book of your heart and you love it and you pored over it, you know, the fresh eyes that take a look at it have your best interest in mind and the best interest of the book, which, you know, can be hard, I think, for if it's like your first book in the editing and, you know, official publishing process. I could imagine that would be difficult, but I've always...
I was so grateful. I was just like, when I have a client sign my book, I was like, I'm going to be the best client that they have ever had. And I feel like I was. Like, I'm like, you know what? I love that process. And I was like, I looked back on it. I was like, okay, yeah, you got it. Okay, here it is. Like, 24 hours later. Okay, I've done what you asked me to do. What's next? grateful after having gone through so many kind of years in the wilderness that I felt I had to do them right by it.
For sure. And I think what you said is just about the editors are really good at their job. They know what they're doing. And I think, you know, it's just good to know, like, about the team process that is behind a book. It's not just the author who's like, okay, here, I'm done, publish it, you know? There's a lot of people who have their hands in it.
And that's me, too. Like, I never wanted to do any self-publishing because I felt like I needed to have more eyes on it than the other half of the equation. But I never felt like my book was done just because I finished writing it. I always felt there was another half of the equation.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, for people out there who don't have agents and editors yet, I think the writing community is so welcoming and wonderful. I had somebody who was like, how do I get, like, beta readers or, you know, whatever. I was like, post about it and post about your story. Talk to people who, you know, you see who might be interested in the same thing. And I think you always have to make sure you're finding somebody who you can trust and who is going to be honest but not like rip you to shreds if it's terrible. Like, you want them to still say it in a nice way, but you know, our community is so wonderful at, you know, wanting to offer feedback and help each other out. So I think for unagented people who, you know, are looking for some more feedback, that's another route to go to.
Absolutely. I would say that people who are willing to be beta readers, like, those are the unsung heroes of the writing process. I mean, to take time out of their lives and read someone else's work for nothing, that's so great.
It is. It is to just, you know, give you some honest feedback that's going to help you and, you know, with kind words is something we all need to hear. So, my last question for you is my favorite question because we're all readers too, and so I love to know what other people are reading. But my question is, what is your favorite book right now? This isn't your favorite book of all time, just a book you've read recently that you really liked.
Oh, God, you know what? I've been fretting about you asking me this because I know totally what you're going to. And I actually literally stood in front of my bookcase before we had our call. So I settled on, I decided on, it is an amazing book, but I've read so many great books recently, and I am reading a great book right now, but I would say that the book that won the Giller Prize last year, Washington Black by S.E. Bijan, is just a stunner. Like, Washington Black, it is outstanding. And so this is a woman who won two Giller Prize. The Giller's the biggest literary prize in Canada. So she won the first time in history, same author who won the Giller Prize back to back.
Wow.
She won both of her books, one after the other, won the Giller. And Washington Black is just astonishing. And it is an adventure. It is an unlikely hero or an atypical hero, which we need right now. It's so imaginative. It takes you from Morocco to a hot air balloon to the deep sea. It really is quite
Sounds amazing.
It is an amazing book. Like, I continually put that book down and said, I can't believe that someone came up with these ideas. Like, her imagination. I interviewed her here in Grimsby. She came for the Grimsby author series, and we did, like, an conversation with, and she is so lovely and so classy and graceful and interesting. Has some wonderful stories to tell about the book and the writing process as well. So I would say that's the one that I'm going to say really stuck with me, even in the past year. And we're right now there. So I'm right now reading a book that's on the watch list for the Giller by Michael Crummy called The Innocent, which is, again, just a beautiful tale of two kids left alone in the Newfoundland Rock. So, I don't know, I guess I come towards Canadian writers, and we have some beautiful homegrown talent here, and, S.A. Dujan, read that, or Half Blood Blues with her other book that won the Giller Prize, her book before that, so.
Well, I love it, thank you. Okay. Sharing those with us. I think it's cool when you, the Washington Black one you said is of the year. I think, you know, it's a good one when it sticks with you. And, you know, even after reading other books, you're like, keep going back to, like, it sounds like a book, like, you were like, oh, I wish I could have written this. I have books like that that I've read where I'm like, I wish I could write like this and, like, have thought of this idea because it's incredible. It, like, makes me want to you know, strive to be better.
Totally. Although there is not a universe in which I could have written that book, but it is. So I read that last December. It's a good idea of how long it has
been. Wow. Definitely a high recommendation then. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, and everybody go buy Love Heather, which is out now.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and be sure to check back in next Friday for another episode. And follow Lori on Instagram and Twitter. Her handle is just her name. And make sure to buy Love Heather and review it everywhere and share it. And also, you know, it does always help me when you guys rate and review the podcast if you can, or share it with your friends and talk about it, tag me, and I'll send you big hearts and googly eyes because it makes me so happy. But thank you guys so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week.